How's it going, guys? It's Derek Bujan from Bujan Goaltending, the host of the roundtable by Bujan Goaltending. I am here with my two co-hosts, which they prefer to be called, Jamie Phillips and Michael Albanese. How are you guys today on this miserable Saturday morning?
Pretty bored. You?
Well, I'm sitting in my office watching the OHL draft right now, so a little bit of boredom, a little bit of excitement. This is kind of fresh feeling because there's actually something going on in the sports world today, so we'll see how the day plays out, but I'm pretty excited for today.
Yeah.
Well, I guess we're on the topic of the O, like, let's talk about that. How, for a goalie out there, say you're, you know, major peewee, minor bantam, you're starting to prepare, the draft's coming up in a few years, how important is the OHL draft to a goalie's actual career?
I don't place a lot of weight in the OHL draft. The one thing the draft allows you is it gives you some leverage. So I think in terms of navigating your career, the worst and hardest time of that is when you're 15, 16 years old. When you're 16 years old and you're moving, you're kind of on the bottom age of junior. So a lot of junior B teams only get two 16-year-old cards. Junior C teams only get one junior C card. So a lot of them are hesitant to use those cards on 16-year-olds. So getting drafted kind of helps you find a spot to play as a 16-year-old. Because we also have to remember, if there's 60 minor midget AAA teams, there's probably 35 midget AAA programs. So the number of AAA goalies severely gets cut, not to mention it becomes a double age group. So there's a lot of guys that play midget AAA minor midget AAA that have a hard time finding a midget AAA spot to play. Now, some of those guys go play junior. Some of those guys go play prep school. So, but the draft definitely helps you navigate that 16-year-old career. And then it also helps when you get a little bit older, when you're looking to play, move up from maybe junior B into junior A, and then trying to find and put yourselves in a good opportunity or a good spot to play if you're looking to maybe go NCAA like we've talked about in the past. But in terms of overall, like, I think a lot of weight, especially in Canada and Ontario, we place maybe too much emphasis on the draft. It's really one day, and it's one year of your career. And a lot of guys kind of put too much into that draft. And if they don't get drafted, they kind of lose that focus and that drive when goalies really develop between 17 and 20 years old. And I think that's really where – a guy's going to make that step, and they shouldn't put too much stock into what one day when they're 15 years old. We also can't discount the draft. The guys that do get drafted are quality goalies. And if you don't get drafted, I think you need to self-reflect and understand that you probably aren't good enough right now. That doesn't mean that you can't develop into somebody who's good enough. I've had a couple guys that I've been drafted fairly high that just never connected the dots and didn't take their game to the next level. And I have guys that have been drafted or haven't been drafted that go on to play college hockey and have careers playing professionally.
Yeah. So, I want to hit on that. You make a really good point. It's I think it's less about getting drafted or not, and more about how you respond to getting drafted or not. Cause like you said, some guys, you know, they get drafted and then they think, I made it. I can, you know, take my foot off the gas. I don't have to see my goalie coach anymore. Obviously I'm good enough to get drafted. I'm just going to keep doing what I'm doing and I'm going to naturally progress to the next levels. And those guys end up taking a back seat. But then on the other side of that, you have guys that don't get drafted and are disappointed. They take it to heart and they use it as a springboard and say, okay, obviously I'm not doing something right. I'm not where I want to be. So I'm going to dig in and work even harder. So it a big part of that is how do you take the draft experience?
Yeah, that makes a lot of sense. I mean, for me, obviously, I was drafted, as you guys know, but it did benefit me, and it also didn't at the same time. I definitely think, you know, going in the fourth round, you know, unfortunately, I didn't have that moment where I thought I was, you know, I thought that was it, like I was the end all be all, but, you know, it did help me get to a junior B team. Yeah. Did it help me play games on the junior B team? Absolutely not. So and I never ended up going to the O. It's hard. It's you guys hit the nail on the head. Like, it can be good, and it could also really not have any effect or any influence. It just depends on how you treat it. You get drafted high or low rounds, and you continue to work and continue to grow and continue to get better. That's great. But if you get drafted and you shut her down from there, it's, you know, the draft doesn't do anything for you. And on the flip side, if you don't get drafted and you get discouraged, you know, and you pack it in that, you know, you're done. But if you don't get drafted and use that as a fire or a catalyst to train and train harder, then you're going to be in a better spot. So it's really, you like, yeah, I think you guys are right. There's people put too much weight on it, and it's not a career defining moment when you're that young.
No, and if you look at the trend in professional hockey at the NHL level, more and more guys are signing as free agents coming out of college because the development curve is so much later. So in terms of long-term processing or long-term career development, and we've talked about how I'm more of an NCAA kind of guy, is if I'm a team and I'm looking at bringing a guy into my system that I need to be able to play games right away, I can have a guy who's 20 years old coming to the OHL, or I can have a guy who's 23 years old that just played 4 years, lived on his own, had to manage schooling, living on his own, plus playing hockey at the Division I level. I'm going to be drawn to that. I'm going to be drawn to that college kid. The other thing that people don't think about in terms of professional hockey is money. If I'm going to a Division I program and I'm going to sign a kid as a free agent, I'm going to be giving him a 2-year entry level deal. If I'm signing a kid that I've drafted out of the OHL, I'm now giving him a 3-year entry level deal, which is a higher signing bonus. So if you look at the trends and you look at the guys that are coming in and playing significant minutes in the NHL, the argument to play Division I is gaining more momentum.
Yeah, that makes sense. And if anyone listening isn't aware, when you sign an entry level contract with an NHL team, the amount of years that the contract is, so between 3 to 1 year, it's based on your age. So when you are 18 to 21, it's a 3-year deal. Then when you're 22 to 23, it's a 2-year deal. And then anything after 23, so 24 and up, it's 1-year deal. That's all you're allowed. That's what they allow the CBA. So like Derek was saying, there are guys that will play junior A hockey until they're 21. And then they're 21-year-old freshmen. And then by the time they're ready to say they play 4 years, they're 25, some of them even 26. So they're only allowed to sign a 1-year deal. Whereas if you're signing a guy at the O, he's either 18 or he's 21. You have to give him a 3-year entry-level deal. And that's how that works.
And you've seen a lot of guys. You didn't know that?
I did not know that. No, but
it's right here. We're here to teach.
Yeah. But I have seen guys getting 3, 2, and 1 year entry level deals. And I always thought that an ELC was 3 years. So that clears that up for me. It makes sense.
Yeah. Well, we should get into like some of the rules too. I guess like when we talk more about my experience in signing, like some of the rules that the NHL, the NCAA have about signing and what you can and can't do, like, you know, it's kind of wild.
The other thing too is a lot of guys that are free agent college guys that are studs that are signing and ELCs, a lot of them are able to negotiate that they get a start that year. So you'll see like there's guys like Brian Decord, Charlie Lindgren, guys that are playing that came out of school that signed as free agents that negotiated in those deals NHL starts right after college. So you'll see some of their first pro minutes are at the NHL level. And that kind of sets them up for the next 5 years. When we get into kind of the politics of professional hockey, as soon as you have an NHL minute or an NHL start, you basically have 5 years of a paycheck, whether it be at the AHL level or if you got to go overseas. But that kind of chip on your shoulder of NHL minutes allows you to negotiate and allows you to market yourself at a much better rate than some of the guys that have AHL or East Coast minutes only. So guys that are coming out of school that can negotiate that NHL start right away, that's a long-term investment in your own future.
Yeah, and since we're talking about guys signing right out of school, that brings us to our guest today. doesn't need much of an introduction, but he's a Stanley Cup champion for the Washington Capitals. He was my goalie partner for 2 years at Michigan Tech, and it's Phoenix Copley, and we're super excited to have that interview with him again. All right, we're joined by a very special guest, my old roommate, goalie partner, NHL goalie, and Stanley Cup champion, Phoenix Copley. How's it going?
Hey, guys. Good to be here.
It's good to be. It's good to have you on, and we'll get right into it. So the first thing that everyone always asks you, and they ask me that when I find out I play with you, is this guy really from North Pole, Alaska?
Yeah. So yeah, I get that a lot all the time too. Yeah, it's just a small town in right outside of Fairbanks. Not much going on there. About 2,000 people, and just a kind of a blue collar town. Not much going on there. I wouldn't recommend visiting there, especially in the winter. But yeah, it's where I'm from.
So growing up in a small town in very far north Alaska, what's it like growing up trying to progress in the minor hockey world and making your way into AAA and junior?
So there's some college teams in Alaska, and then obviously there was the pro team in Anchorage there for a bit. So you kind of, like, we had an idea of, like, the levels of hockey, and me and my brothers and teammates, like, we knew where we wanted to go. But obviously it's kind of an unorthodox path. There's not a whole lot of guys coming out of Alaska. We travel on the teams we were on. We go to Chicago or LA, or we go to BC sometimes and play teams. So, the travel was a lot for young teams, but we were able to get out, and then when I was 17, I went and played in California for a year, and that was like big for my development. It was big to kind of get away from home, and it was good to get exposure, and scouts and stuff were able to watch games obviously a lot more when you're in the States rather than up in Alaska. So but yeah, it was different coming from there. And I didn't have many teammates who made it out of Alaska playing juniors or college, but I did have a lot of good teammates. It's just tough to get scouted while you're up there.
What did you do growing up in terms of goalie coaching? I know that there, like, Fairbanks has some and then Anchorage has some. Did you travel to kind of whoever was coaching, or was it all basically on your own until you went off to California?
It was a lot on my own, like, obviously watching videos on YouTube and stuff of goalies. There were some goalie coaches, guys who played locally just growing up. U18s or juniors were their peak, but they knew drills, and they kind of knew. It was good just to have someone watching you. So I had a number of guys who would help out the team's goalies who weren't, reputable goalie coaches by any means, but they were good to have around. And then obviously getting out in Southern California, there was a goalie coach there I'd work with, Steve Switzer, and he was the first goalie coach who actually kind of understood goaltending, and it was his job. And so I was able to work with him maybe once or twice a month, and that was like my first real goalie coaching, and that was really good. It was good for my development because I was able to learn more of a technical side rather than just coming up with drills and doing drills.
So I want to ask about Southern California, coming out of Alaska and going to, the lower 48. I'd imagine Southern California, maybe not the hockey hotbed of, Minnesota or Michigan or Massachusetts. So what brought you there?
There's a couple guys from my teams that went there. So one of them was my stepbrother, and then we had a couple guys who we played with, and there was a connection there, and I don't know exactly how it was, but we ended up all three or four of us went there and played, and it was actually hockey there was actually surprisingly big. Like, there was a number of teams and a number of really good teams, and we had a good team there as well. So it was surprising, and we had a really good season, and we played in the NAPHL, which was the first year for that league, but I think now it's been going on for a while, and it was good. Learned a lot there.
So if you were learning a lot from YouTube, who were the goalies that you were trying to emulate?
I loved Marc-Andre Fleury, so I was like watching him, like I was dissecting his game all the time. But I mean, I'd watch any goalie, but I remember I was obsessed with Marc-Andre Fleury for quite a while.
All right. So then after your time in California, you went to play in the NOL, Corpus Christi Ice Rays.
Yeah.
Tell us a little about that. We had Dylan Kelly on. He played in the NOL too, and he talked about basically that Texas South Division is just a warrior division. How was your experience for you?
That division was wild. I remember we played we were playing New Mexico, and they had just got this guy sent down from Quebec, and he had got kicked out of the Quebec Major Junior League there, and he was arrested or something, and he was coming down just a meathead, and but it's just like another day in the South Division. Like, that's where you go if you're arrested and kicked out of another league, the South Division and then the NOL. But yeah, it was fun. It was another season. We didn't have a great team that year. We didn't do great, but it was another year where I felt like I learned a lot and got to play a good amount of games. And yeah, it was a good division, very competitive.
Go
ahead.
Can you talk about moving from or getting recruited from junior to Michigan Tech, where you went?
Yeah, so I played 1 year in the North American League, and then I was I went to Tri-City Storm in the USHL. So I played 2 years of juniors, and then while I was in Tri-City, I was recruited by Michigan Tech. Bill McGold, as Jamie knows, coming out and watching some games. I was talking to a few schools, and I went and visited Michigan Tech, and it seemed like a really good fit, and I liked the area, and of course they had Steve Shields as a goalie coach, which was huge with his experience in the NHL. So I was really excited, and obviously have a good education up there as well. So that's kind of the process for me. I was just kind of looking for a good education and somewhere I thought I could improve my game a lot, and Michigan Tech was the choice.
So when you were kind of comparing schools and weighing your options, were you more focused on the academic program, or were you more focused on a hockey program that could get you to the NHL?
Honestly, I was looking at both. Like, I wanted a spot where I'd get a good education, because obviously, you know, you can't really count on signing an NHL contract, especially when you're undrafted. So I was really looking for both. I wanted somewhere where I could give myself a chance to get an NHL contract, but at the same time, I wanted to be able to have an education that I could fall back on if that didn't work out.
So when you came in, you started majority of the games as a freshman. What was it like dealing with the pressure of not only being your first year at college, but being the starter and having the school? How did you balance all of that, the weight?
Yeah, it was, it was a lot, you know. I mean, everyone knows going into college, you know, it's kind of a new adventure or something new that you not exactly sure what's going to happen. So it was a lot. And I mean, one of the first couple road trips I didn't go on, and that was a big eye opener. I was left home. I think it was in Bemidji you guys went, and I didn't go, and I was like, so that was a big eye opener, but it ended up working out well. And it was, I mean, like I said, it was a lot, and I chose a difficult degree. So I was busy with school and busy with hockey. And I mean, looking back, it's like, wow, that was a lot. I'm not sure why I put myself through that, but I think it was really good to kind of have that challenge. I think it helped me, especially with time management and stuff. And
cool. I wanted to ask about that, that Bemidji road trip that you didn't go on. Was that, were you sick, or was that the team's decision to leave you behind? We don't really need you here.
Yeah, they took two goalies on road trips, and we had a senior, and me and Jamie, and so it was pretty much, it was either me or Jamie staying behind.
Yeah,
because they were taking the senior, especially at the beginning of the year. So
So like, what happens at college? Also, like, obviously there's three goalies, and usually the roster is full of, you know, like 30 guys, and so you can only travel with two goalies, and you bring what, 25 players? No, 22 players.
Yeah, I'm not sure, but yeah, there's a number of guys that stay back. And
yeah, so you stay back and you basically have like plug skate, and so right. You're required to practice on your own, the one goalie and like eight angry players.
Yeah,
and the strength coach is usually in charge. Yeah, usually in charge of the skates. Yeah. And I think there was at least two fights every practice, like full on angry brawls between guys in those skates. It was It was vicious. But yeah, the start of the year, it was either you or I were traveling. And then towards the end of the year, they started to leave Janot at home. And then as you and I started to go, I would just support. I was in a supporting role, but I was still there.
Yeah, I mean, it's a battle for ice time, like it always is. But yeah, it's uncertainty, and you're just doing what you can to try and put yourself in a spot to be able to play. I think, and Jamie can speak to this as well, but I think we're pretty fortunate to have Steve Shields, because he obviously has a wealth of experience, and so when you're going through those tough times, he was a good guy to talk to, and he has a good head on his shoulders, although he is kind of like a little kid in a grown man's body. But he understands the game really well, and he's obviously been through a lot, so it's good to have him around to talk to. And he definitely helped going through the struggles and challenges of starting off in college.
And our coach, our head coach, great head coach, but he is not a goalie kind of. He doesn't really. Yeah, it's hard
That's
to say. He's not.
I think.
Yeah, he's not a big fan of. He's not a big fan of goalies. So when even going back to your question, it's like, when we were there, say we had a road trip and you leave on a Wednesday, everyone would pack their belongings, their clothes and stuff for the trip, and you'd come in and you'd just be sitting in the room waiting. And then he'd come in, write the numbers of who was traveling. And so if you weren't traveling, you just had to go back home, back to your apartment or your dorm with all your stuff. Basically like the walk of shame, you're angry, you're pissed off. I mean, We won't get into too many stories because
I will say something though that's kind of it's funny, but at the same time it really sucked at the time. We were on the road and it was me and Philly rooming together, and I don't know what time it was.
I totally forgot about this.
I thought about this the other day, and he was like, it was like 11, maybe past 11, maybe closer to midnight, and we had a game the next day. We're in the hotel, lights are out, we're both trying to sleep. We don't know who's playing the next day, and suddenly our phone rings, the hotel phone. I think I answered it. Mel goes, "Hey, put Jamie on the phone, would you?" And he tells you, "Phoenix is starting tomorrow. Can you put Phoenix back on the phone?"
My God.
"Hey, you're starting tomorrow." And this is close to midnight, and we're both like, just woke up.
Yeah.
But that was just...
Sounds like a mind game central, eh?
He was a good coach. He didn't. Goaltending was not his strong suit. His coaching goalies
We'll get into that album when you have an episode on like coaching. But there was one time too. So he was a big fan of just pacing the hallways and just trying to see if anyone was sneaking out or anything. So we had left our door slightly open for whatever reason. But I think we were just like, we were doing something on the internet, but we were laughing. And I think it turned into like play wrestling. And he just walked right in as we're wrestling on top of each other in the bed. He just looks at us and then just walks right out. Doesn't say a single word. But like he would just, if the door was open, he would just straight up walk into your room.
He was definitely a unique coach for sure.
Oh, and then so you played 2 years at Tech, and then you ended up signing with Washington Capitals. So what was it like, kind of the process of speaking with an NHL team, trying to decide if you wanted to leave school? Like, talk us through that whole process.
Yeah, so I first spoke with at the NHL teams after the GLI my freshman year, and I was like, that was just obviously like really exciting. I it was the first time I'd ever really spoken with NHL teams, and then my second year I got a little bit more attention, and the Capitals had contacted me early on, and then they were kind of coming to games throughout the season, and so they were scouting me pretty heavily, and then sometime in February before the season ended, they said they were going to try and come up with a contract for me and ask me if I'd be interested in that. And I was like, holy smokes, absolutely. Like, obviously I'll need to think about it, but that's absolutely something I'm interested in. And then at the end of the season, they offered me the contract, and I took a couple days to kind of think about it. It was only after my second year of school, and I went to school planning on getting a degree. So that's kind of just where I was at and thinking about do I want to, you know, come back to school later and try and finish it while I'm playing, or do I want to try and finish it out right now and then hope for a contract after 4 years? And again, being undrafted, you never really know what's going to happen. And so I, you know, that could have been my only opportunity. So that was in my back of my mind as well. And at the end of the day, I decided, you know, to go with the NHL contract. And I knew, you know, the next 2 years at Michigan Tech were going to be not easy by any means with Jamie there. And it was always a battle for ice time. So I was just happy to have an NHL contract and try and make the most of it.
The goalie coach for Washington when you signed was Mitch Korn, right?
He actually didn't. That summer he got on board. So I woke up to a text from Steve Shields one day that just said, you just hit the jackpot. And I was extremely confused and he didn't text me back. I was like, what are you talking about?
That sounds no like text Shields back. And then never texted
later
you back.
That day, later that day, I found out that Mitch Korn had become part of the Capitals organization. I was like, well, obviously that's what he's talking about, because he had always spoken very highly of Mitch Korn. So it was awesome to work with him. He's a great coach, obviously unbelievable goalie mind, and just really fortunate to be able to pick his brain.
So coming out of school, what adjustments did you have to make to transition from college into the American League?
So right out of school, I went to Hershey for a couple weeks, and then there was an injury in South Carolina, so I was able to go play games there. But I remember the first 2 weeks in Hershey, I was like, holy smokes, like I was just getting sniped left and right, and everything was happening so fast on the ice. And it's not necessarily that guys are moving faster, but they're smarter, and so they're making plays that guys at the college level don't make, which speeds the game up quite a bit. So that was just the speed of the game and the intelligence of players was something that I had to adjust to and kind of get the speed of my own game, pick that up and kind of read plays a little bit better, read shots better. And it was nice to kind of get down to South Carolina and get some game action and kind of get my confidence at the pro level up a little bit. And the biggest thing for me, I think, was the speed and intelligence of players. That was where I really noticed that I had to improve, and that was the big difference.
So did Mitch Korn help you with anything through that first summer?
So he was there at the development camp, and you know, I was just obviously trying to soak up as much as I could from him. He's got a lot of unique drills and different things that he does. And, you know, sometimes you're like, why the hell, like, why are we doing this? It's like, what can this possibly do with goaltending? But it's just different types of movements. Like I remember we were like wrestling, kind of like doing kind of sumo wrestling at center ice, trying to push each other out of the circle. And you're like, why are we doing this? But when you think about it, you know, you're getting stronger on your edges. You're using your brain and thinking of different ways to move and get the guy out of the circle. So, you know, it's some of the stuff you do with Mitch, you don't understand why, but until later on why you're doing it. But he's like I said, he's a great goalie mind, and there's always a reason to the stuff he does, even though it might not be obvious at first. So yeah, the first time I was able to work with him was at development camp, and it was awesome. And you know, I remember I was like taking notes after every day, trying to just remember what he was saying, because he would always he had the little presentations and stuff that he'd go through about the game and his thoughts on you know, plays and certain things. And I was just trying to absorb as much of it as I could. So I was very fortunate for that. And then my first year, I didn't really get to work with him a whole lot because he was in D.C. But in Hershey, we had Scott Murray, who's now the goalie coach in D.C. And he was he's amazing as well. He's kind of like a mini Mitch Korn, how tuned he is with goaltending and how smart he is with the game. And he's another great goalie coach that I'm fortunate to have worked with. And lucky in that regard.
So you're at a development camp and you got a guy telling you to put your stick down and sumo wrestle this other goalie at center ice. Yeah. And you're in no position to be like, no, that's dumb. I'm not doing that.
Yeah. And this is the best goalie coach of all time that people say. And I'm like, what's going on? And then we did this other one another day where he put two nets in the zone just in random spots, and we were playing tag. two guys. We had four goalies, so two guys would watch and two guys would just play tag, and you could like use the nets to dodge each other. And like I was saying at the time, it's like, what on earth are we doing? But when you think back, like, you're doing very unique stuff that's working on skills that don't ever get worked on, and you're doing a lot of stuff with the edges. You're working on speed, and there's a reason why he's one of the best goalie coaches in the world, and he has a reason behind what he does.
Yeah.
So you end up getting traded to St. Louis after your first season with Hershey, and you end up getting your first NHL minutes. What was it like to get out there in the big ice?
Yeah, that was unreal. I mean, obviously it's not the ideal situation to go into a game. I think we were down 5-0 or something when I went in, but it was in Nashville, and that's a crazy place to play. It's very loud. Fans are on top of you, and it's an awesome atmosphere. So it was awesome to get in there, and I think I only had like 5 shots, but the first shot was kind of like just a floater right into my gut, and so I felt really good to get the first save out of the way. But it was awesome. I was very very thankful to get in the net there, and obviously I was hungry and wanted more, but that wouldn't come that season. I wasn't able to play again at that level until the following year. But due to injuries to the goalies that year, me and Jordan Binnington both got quite a bit of time up, so we were able to get in a lot of practice time and just kind of be around the guys and be around the whole NHL experience. So it was good, regardless of not getting to play a whole lot in the NHL that year. It was good just to be around and see what it takes to stay at that level.
Was Dave Alexander in St. Louis when you were there?
No, it was Jim Corsi at the time.
I just missed Dave. Dave's I know Dave. I met Dave a couple times, and he's a wealth of knowledge. Big, that kind of the father of dynamic skating. So I'm a big Dave Alexander fan.
Nice. Yeah, I've met him in passing in the preseason, this season. But I've heard really good things about him, but I don't know him that well.
So Bitter was your partner.
Yeah.
What was it like playing with him? And then what was it like fighting him a couple of years later when he went to Providence?
I've been very fortunate with the goalie partners I've had. I've played with, every year I played with pretty great goalies. So I've considered myself pretty lucky in that regard. But yeah, Binner was no exception. Obviously, he's a great talent, but he's a great dude. He's got a great personality, and he's just got a personality that, you know, I think when you're around him, he's just so mellow, and and you can see it on the ice. He's sometimes you wonder if his heart rate's where his heart rate's at. A lot of times he'd get off the ice and I'm like dripping in sweat after practice and he's not sweating at all. he's just one of those guys who's just mellow, naturally mellow. But he was a great guy. And yeah, that game we fought, it was like 4-0 or 4-1 at the start of the second. It was completely out of control. And there was like 3 fights going on and a delayed penalty. So he had been skating to his bench, and he ended up like at the blue line, so I just came out and I was like, "Hey, we gotta go." So, yeah, we ended up fighting. That was more like a sumo wrestling match too, because we were just like, I don't think either of us wanted to punch the other one in the face. We were pretty good friends, but it just happened that we were fighting, so we were just kind of pushing each other until the refs came in. But yeah, he was a good teammate. I enjoyed playing with him.
Was that fight before or after you fought Poulin?
That was after. I fought Poulin my first year.
Did you? And you won that fight pretty good. You're an animal.
Yeah. Yeah, that one was kind of one-sided. I don't think Poulin really wanted to fight me, although like he just like started waving his gloves at me. I was just like hanging out while there was another line brawl going on, and I was just kind of hanging out, and he started like coming out of his net waving his gloves, and I was like, all right. I think it was kind of the reverse of the situation. I think we might have been kind of blowing that game out, and he wanted out or something. But
he probably didn't know you were from Alaska. I grew up fighting bears.
Yeah, I don't know, but it was he just kind of fell, and that was that.
You ended up getting your first start in your second year at St. Louis. What were the emotions like leading up to that game? Like, did you know you were starting? Was it an injury? Like, talk us through that.
The Blues were kind of going through a rough patch, and I think they were just trying to try some different things out. And I had been playing pretty well in Chicago, and they were in Winnipeg, and yeah, they just got the call. We were in Grand Rapids. I got the call to head to St. Louis, and hopped on a plane, went to St. Louis. Didn't know I was going to be playing the next day. So in practice, I was like, didn't take any shots. Both Elliot and Allen were, it was Carter Hutton. They were both healthy. But like I said, the team was struggling and things weren't really going well at the time for them. So they were, I think, just trying new things. And so then after practice, we got on the plane. And when we landed, Hutch told me that I would be playing the next day. And I was like, oh, smokes, awesome. Great. So yeah, it was first start. That's another arena that's pretty wild, and it's a great atmosphere and a lot of fun to play there. But unfortunately, we didn't get the win and ended up losing, I think, 5-3. But it was awesome to get my first full game in, and yeah, I was very excited.
Were you nervous to start, or like when did you feel comfortable in the net, or did you feel comfortable at all?
Yeah, I was nervous, but my thoughts have always been, you know, like I've played hockey my whole life, and you know, it's just a game that's no different than any other game I've played. So I was more excited than anything that you know, a dream of mine was finally going to be achieved. But yeah, I mean, obviously, like the minute he told me, I just get really excited, and I mean, it was tough to fall asleep when you know your dream's going to be achieved the next day. But I was really excited. That's the only thing that comes to mind when I think back on that.
So you end up getting traded back to Washington in a bizarre series of events. How did it feel to end up going back to an organization that just traded you 2 years prior?
It was good. I was obviously very familiar with a lot of the guys and the coaches in the organization. I had no clue it was happening. It was very unexpected. I was just kind of hanging out in Chicago, and I got the call. It was actually Mitch Korn who called me and told me about it. And I had no clue. I saw him calling, and I was like, what could this be about? Like, he's goalie coach with the Capitals. And he was just like, you're coming back. And I was like, all right. So I was out of there the next morning at 8 a.m. I think they told me it was like 10:30 at night. And I just packed up as much stuff as I could and left the next morning.
That was in the Oshie trade, right?
The first one was the Oshie trade, and then the second was the Shattenkirk trade.
So you were traded one for one for Oshie and one for one with Shattenkirk.
Sure. We can say that, yeah.
That's got to be a sign that organization wants you, though. I mean, to bring a guy back, they already know who you are. They know what you're about. They know what you can do.
I had
really good back if they're like, oh, we don't want this guy.
Yeah, I had really good relationships with all the staff and the guys there, and you know, I worked with Mitch Korn that had been going really well, and with Scott Murray as well. And I think Scott's really comfortable with my game, and I'm really comfortable working with him, and I think we have a good relationship, and we both really enjoy working together. So I think you know, it was just a lot of familiarity, and you know, I think it was good to go back. Honestly, like it's better to go to a team that you know some guys and you're a little bit more familiar with, I think, than, you know, I was traded in juniors and I didn't know anybody, didn't know any of the coaches, and it was a little bit harder to adjust mid-season when you're trying to learn about the systems and learn about, you know, the coaches and players and how everything's going. And so it was definitely, it made it a lot easier being familiar with the guys and staff.
So that was the season. And that was your first year back in Washington was the year you guys won the cup, right?
That was the following year.
The following year. So let's talk about that. So you're a Stanley Cup champion.
Yeah, yeah, that was wild.
Yeah, so it's wild, and so you blacked eight. You were a black ace,
yeah.
Correct?
So I went there.
I was going to say, explain that for people that don't know. What is a black ace, and how does it all work for people listening that have really never heard of the term or what that position is?
Okay, so yeah, a black ace is the teams who are in the playoffs like to have some extra guys around in case there's injuries or sicknesses or emergencies where guys can't play. So Usually, I mean, I've heard of groups of up to 20 guys. I know LA had 15 to 20 guys one year when they won the cup, and certain teams do it differently, but the Capitals had a kind of a smaller group that year. We only had five or six guys, and it's just kind of emergency guys in case there's injuries or guys that are coming in and out of the lineup. And so, yeah, I was in that role in the 2018 playoffs, and I went there, I think, a couple days before the playoffs started. And, yeah, it was a wild ride. And that team just loved to play together so much that I think they just wanted to keep playing the whole summer. They didn't want to stop playing. Everyone was just having so much fun there. And, I mean, it was like the attitude around the rink and around that team was amazing. And, you know, I think there's a reason why they won the cup. They all bonded together so well. And it was awesome to be around that and just see. It was like the magic of winning a Stanley Cup is amazing. And those guys, it was the love that they had for each other was amazing. And just being around, like watching Holtz, how focused he was and how he prepares before games is amazing. Like he's so dialed, and it was cool to see him fulfill that.
So like Stanley Cup winning game, so you were in the press box. How does that work for you to get from the press box down to the dressing room, the whole thing, and then were you on the ice lifting that cup?
Actually, in Vegas, they didn't have a press box for us. That was the only arena that we were in the locker room the whole time, just watching on TV and working out and doing whatever. But yeah, we were, I don't know, like at what point, probably some point in the third, we were all like, holy cow, this is actually going to happen. Like, we're going to have to start getting in our gear here pretty soon. And it was wild. We're like, we're about to go touch the Stanley Cup. And it was just kind of a surreal moment where, I mean, obviously, like I wasn't on the ice, so I hadn't put what those other guys had put into it. But just being around the whole run and seeing everything, it was amazing. And then to come to that moment where it's like, holy cow, it's happening. It was pretty unreal, and we were all just really excited to get to be there and witness that. And it was magical.
And what did it feel like to raise the cup over your head?
It's just surreal. You're like, holy cow. I was just like, how did I end up here? This is great. Like, right. I mean, you're around, watching what the team had gone through. Like, it was amazing. And I consider myself very fortunate to have been able to witness that firsthand. And but something that I got from the whole run, besides watching them, I was able to work with Scotty and Mitch a lot more, and I was getting a lot of ice time, and we were able to work on like some details that I think really helped me going into my first NHL season, where I was able to be on the ice with these guys a lot and facing these shots and traveling around with them and seeing just like what the NHL season and what the NHL playoffs are all about. That was a great thing that really helped me development was working with Scotty and Mitch so much in that time.
I got to ask you about Holpe Grubauer relationship there. Did they spend a lot of time together on and off the ice, or were they talking a lot, or was it kind of just Holpe had the reins, so he was just kind of doing his own thing on an island?
Well, actually, at the start of the playoffs, it was Gruby that started the first two games. But you know, as far as I know, they had a good relationship. I wasn't around those two a whole lot just during the playoff run, and I didn't see any indication that there was anything going on there. I think they were good friends.
Yeah,
I think,
supporting each other.
When,
right?
When you're playing a lot of games, you're kind of focused and doing your thing, and so I don't think I think they're good buddies as far as I know.
But I'm almost trying to stir the pod. Just let the rest know. Give them Grubauer, Holpe hate each other. Stanley Cup.
Let's throw some drama in here.
Yeah. I would just want any information on an Avalanche goalie you can get. Yeah.
Just trying to get some Grubauer. Well,
Grubauer's a great guy. He was my goalie partner my first year in Hershey, and he was extremely consistent, and just his approach, he was very consistent.
He seems like mega serious.
He's a pretty serious guy, yeah. But I think I don't know. He's also he likes to laugh and have a good time. But his overall approach is pretty serious.
Yeah, I mean we really only see what they want to show the media, right? I mean, we don't get to see how he's like in the room with the boys or at dinner. So
yeah. No, he's a quieter guy and he is pretty serious. But he was a great goalie partner, like very supportive and you know. He was always like when I would have success, he was always very happy for me and obviously I was always happy for him as well. He was a good guy and obviously he's putting together quite a career, which is awesome to see.
Now before we get into your first full season, you were a part of possibly the most legendary Stanley Cup celebration of all time. For you personally, I mean, I know you can't talk too much about some of the wild stuff, but for you personally, how long was your party time? Like, what is there anything that you could tell us, you know, that won't get anyone in trouble that you just saw that was like, this is just wild?
I mean, the partying that was going on was pretty wild. I mean, obviously, you win a cup and it's just like everything goes, everyone's just letting loose. It was a grind to get there. And, I mean, there was quite a bit of stuff that went viral with the fountain and, other stuff that was going on. But yeah, I mean, it was just, I can't think of anything off the top of my head that sticks out, but I mean, you see Ovi, he loves having fun. He's, not shy about it either, which, most everyone knows by now, but it was cool to see the celebration because a lot of times it seems like maybe there's some holding back going on to keep things private, but that was definitely not going on with this celebration. Everything was just out in the open. Everyone was just doing what they wanted to do and enjoying the moment, and it was cool to be around that because you know you work so hard to get to that moment, so you might as well enjoy it and have fun with it, and it was cool to be around that and just soak it in, and it was wild.
As someone from the outside, it was refreshing to see that, and it was refreshing to see those guys just show sheer emotion when they won and not kind of hold back. So it really showed, like, hockey players kind of have that stigma of being like, you look at Jonathan Taves, he's a robot, but when you watch Alexander Ovechkin in the fountain, and you're like, like that's what winning's about, and like that is, it was really refreshing to see. So I'm glad that they definitely kind of, like, it was called the Summer of Ovi for a reason. So definitely showed the more real side of kind of winning and what it can do to you. So
I agree. I think when you do watch like when Taves won and Crosby won it, you know, they seem like very professional guys, and you know they got things under wraps and they're not going to make a fool of themselves, but Ovi, he doesn't really care about that. He's just going to do what he wants to do. And, you know, and everyone saw that he was just having fun and he was in the moment and not holding anything back. And I think, like you were saying, that's what winning's about. You know, you work so hard to get a championship, and when you get one, you might as well enjoy it.
The next season is your first full NHL season. What is the adjustment like going from a full American League season to a full NHL season?
You know, there's a lot of travel because every game you're going the day before the game, every road game you're going the day before. We're in the American League. You're staying at home a lot more and then busing the day of the game, at least in this conference. In the West, it's a little bit different. But, so just kind of seeing that, it makes it a little bit more of a grind because you're on the road quite a bit more, and but it also at the same time, you know, you're going to cities that you're not going to in the American League, so it's, you're seeing a lot of places that, you know, the biggest cities in America, and so that's kind of a cool aspect of that. But for me, you know, I think that being around in the playoffs really helped me kind of prime my game and work on things that I need to work on to have more success at the NHL level. And so coming off of that 2.5 months of the playoff run and being able to work with Scotty so much and have the NHL shooters and going through the practices, I think really helped me go into the season a lot more prepared with what to expect. And just something as simple as the travel there, it's a lot different than in the American League where you're bussing around and you know, in the NHL you're flying around. So it's just kind of adjusting in that way and getting my head wrapped around all that in the playoff run really helped prepare me for what to expect going into my first year.
Now, so you were in a supporting role to Holtby. I mean, you ended up playing 27 games. So it's a lot of games. For younger goalies out there that maybe it's their first time, you know, they're entering junior and it's their first time being a backup, how do you handle being consistent when your starts aren't consistent?
You know, I've always just trying to get better. When I'm not playing, I want to put myself in the best position to play well when I get the chance. So, you know, I wouldn't focus too much on how much you're playing. I would just focus on getting better and preparing yourself for when you get the opportunity. And that way, when you do get the opportunity, you'll be ready and then you'll be able to have a better chance to run with it and get in there more often. But yeah, I was in more of a supporting role that year, and it was good to watch Holtz. And yeah, he's a great goalie, another great goalie partner to have. And it was good. He was a good goalie, and it was fun watching. He's obviously put together quite a career, and it's cool to see that up close and personal and see what he does so consistently and what he does well and be around all that. And so that was awesome. And I just tried to soak that in, and I just tried to get as much improvement as I could in my game. Obviously playing against some of the best guys in the world there on a regular basis in practice. So I was just trying to soak all that in and do my best to improve my game. And so I can stay at that level for as long as possible.
Watching you from college, where you were basically Marc-Andre Fleury and they so flexible and wide, to watching your when you were in the NHL full time, you were very, very narrow. So was that in part from the groin injury?
Well, Scotty and I in during the cup run, we had talked a lot about narrowing my stance more for just like for lateral plays so I could get there quicker without being in a better spot to make saves. So that would be more of that. But I do think when you're wider in your stance, you definitely are engaging your groins more. So it probably was just like a side benefit of something that Scotty had been working on me with. And yeah, I don't think it was necessarily related to the groin.
Booge, you had a question about what he asked himself back in the...
Yeah, I had one of my goalies ask me to ask you this. If you had to go back and tell 15-year-old Phoenix Copley one piece of advice, what would that be?
I would just tell myself to embrace adversity. I think no matter what, when you're a goalie and trying to come up through the ranks, there's going to be a lot of ups and downs, and there's going to be a lot of adversity that you have to face. And no matter what, you know, there's no escaping it. And I think the better you are at handling it, the better position you're going to be in to succeed. And so yeah, I was just saying, embrace adversity, and you know, when you embrace it, you can come out of a better goalie rather than letting it affect you in a negative way.
It's a great answer.
Thanks. It's a really good answer. We're running out of time, but Phoenix, thanks a lot for coming on. We appreciate it. We'll definitely have you on for part two. We didn't even scratch the surface about how you and I were the first viral goalies on Vine.
Yeah,
our saga is a living together.
How did we miss that? Wasn't it somebody in the shopping cart?
We did. Well, we also get. Let's just get into it. Let's just get into it. So when Vine doesn't exist anymore. Now it's TikTok. But Phoenix
you
and I
broke
had,
Vine.
Yeah, we had our junior gear in our house. And we had just decided, like, all right, what if we just put on all of our gear and just try to do, like, just daily activities and also, like, almost like jackass kind of activities, full gear.
Yeah, or like, yeah, we just like make fun of other videos.
Yeah,
we do it with our gear on.
Oh, we shredded up. Your Tri-City pads got shredded up.
Yeah, we were on like the cement with them. We were like running around in the grass with them. We were at them in the shower that one time with the water.
Oh, that's
on.
Right.
Yeah, is there anywhere to find these videos still, or are they just gone in the ether?
I don't know. We'd have to look, but since then a lot of people have started to kind of like copy that, and they carved out their own little following, but we were the originals.
They're watching the Stinky Five videos.
Yeah. And even the name, like, we came up with that name because of David Johnstone.
Yeah.
The name was Stinky Five, wasn't it?
Yeah. We'll have to have another episode because we'll have a lot more to cover. Just even more of the fun stuff of, you know, playing college hockey. And there was, it was a good time for everyone. And so the experience there. And you're obviously a very intelligent person, mechanical engineer. That's an incredibly difficult degree.
At 2 years.
2 years of mechanical. And are you going to finish? Are you working towards finishing it? Or
I'm actually like closer to 70% done. I transferred to school in Alaska, UAF. The little rival of Michigan Tech.
Oh, the Nanics. What a guy.
Yeah, the Nanics. But so I continued doing it online through UAF after, but now I'm at a point where some of the classes are just pretty tough to do online, and it's hard to ask questions when you're and doing math classes like that without being able to interface one-on-one is really tough. So I just stopped at 70%, and when I'm done playing hockey, I'll go back and do classes in person where I can get more out of it. But I just hope I'll have the leftover math things I learned at Michigan Tech. I don't know, it might be tough, but especially without some of the tutors we had there to help us.
Oh yeah, we had a good chemistry tutor. Oh yeah, too many inside jokes, but Phoenix.
I feel like that's one that's
too many inside jokes. Phoenix, thanks a lot for coming on. We really appreciate it, and we can't wait to have you on for part two.
Yeah, thanks guys, this was fun. I won't hold you down.